Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily. I'm too scared for scary movies, and I missed you guys.
I'm Henley. I'm also too scared for scary movies, and I missed you guys, too.
I'm Sammy. I love scary movies, and I freaking miss you guys all the time.
All the time.
Here we are. All the time.
All the dang time.
We took a week off from the podcast, so we're back. Thrilled to be back. Obviously, a lot's been going on, which is why we took that time off. And, you know, I could ask you guys what's up, but that's what's up is everything that's happening in the world that we're all really dealing with and thinking about. And we're three white ladies, so we know that we don't know necessarily the right things to say, but we're trying, and we figured we'll just check in and talk about what's going on with us in this moment.
Yeah. It's been emotional and overwhelming, also inspiring and kind of hopeful. It's been a lot of things, I think. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I'm not alone in this, but basically realizing that I'm like racist and part of a racist system as a white person that of like
just like much more passive and complicit than I would have thought is how where I've been like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like infuriating.
It's been so easy.
It's infuriating and really shameful. And I got, you know, pretty overwhelmed by a lot of those emotions for a few days and kind of to a point of inaction, which like in itself comes from a place of privilege, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
I have the privilege to be able to kind of not do anything because I'm, you know, I benefit from this system. And so I like kind of then came to a point of, oh, that's not helpful for anybody. And I need to move past that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I've just been trying to do what I can to stay active about this, because it's like, it's been a big wake up call. And I don't think that, you know, sitting this out is an option, really.
It's been amazing to watch the whole world, specifically America, seem to like wake up to this at the same time.
Yeah.
And for just myself to wake up to it too. And it feels like this is a different moment. It feels like things are actually going to change, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so.
I mean, I know that I'm starting to do the work that I should have been doing my whole life. And I know that like the people I'm closest to who are also white are also starting to do that work. Just even like recognizing how you're complicit in white supremacy, being able to talk about your whiteness is something that we've never had to do. At least I haven't had to do.
Right.
Certainly not in like the groups that I'm like as much as I'm doing it, and with how many people and the tone of the conversations. And
I think,
I mean, I feel different. Even in 2 weeks,
it's a combination, right, of internal and external work. And it's also it's not short term.
Yeah, no, it's like lifelong. I mean, I think what a lot of people are realizing right now is that it's like we have to make a lifelong commitment, as particularly as white people, because like we built these systems.
Mm-hmm. Well, and black people have been fighting this fight and we're just now joining it.
Right.
Like, also, as what it's the movement didn't start. It 2 weeks ago.
No.
Right.
We just started actually, speaking for myself, actually actively paying attention and wanting to change and be better and accept what I don't know. And a big thing for me has been being okay with being uncomfortable, which is like sounds so simple, but that sort of even having this conversation on a podcast that people listen to and can all in all likelihood find something to be upset about or like blame us for that we could have done wrong, and just accepting that like, well, the worst thing that happens is people die. Not that I put my foot in my mouth or make a mistake. Like I need to try and just do my best. And then if I do something wrong, learn and do better the next time. And that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just part of it.
Yeah, that's been a big thing for me, too, is being afraid of looking stupid. And usually I like to wait, or like I won't talk about something unless I feel like an expert in what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And obviously I'm not an expert in any of this. And so my instinct is to be silent about it. And that's just like also not OK. So I feel like it's OK to like get it wrong. It's not okay to do nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it is a lifetime. Like, you can't fix it if you just for 2 weeks go to every protest, sign every petition, post every single thing you see, scream at all your family members, which is like how I felt at the beginning of like, oh, I have to talk to everyone. I have to do it all. I have to.
Yeah,
and that
same.
Will be the thing that keeps it from being an, like, you have to find a way to incorporate it into your daily life and your daily practice, because it's about dismantling an entire system that we are all brought up within and don't even see most of the time if we're not looking.
Right.
Oh my God. I feel like our kids are, and hopefully our grandchildren are going to look back on this moment and be like, wow, you guys were fucking idiots. Like,
it's a thing. My sister had her first child in January. And a thing that I keep thinking that genuinely gives me hope is, wow, he's going to be such a better person than I am, because my sister is already a better person than me. And so like he, oh my God, like
he's going to defund the police.
It's already going to be defunded, man.
He's going to grow up in a world without police.
Yes. Yeah. So Henley, you've started, we all ordered this book. It's very, very back ordered. So mine has not arrived yet, but you were able to start.
Yes. I was able to start this book called Me and White Supremacy by Layla Saad. It's a workbook, so it's actually very involved in terms of like journaling, and it's kind of speaking to more of the internal work that we were talking about before, about just recognizing within yourself how white supremacy kind of lives inside of you as a white person and the ways in which you've lived into it kind of unknowingly and blindly. But I want to recommend that book, but I also really want to recommend Ta-Nehisi Coates did an interview with Ezra Klein this week or last week. And he said something that really, really stuck with me, which is, you know, the idea of defunding the police sounds really extreme to certain people. But if you actually, the people who feel like it sounds extreme to are probably the ones who are already living in a community where the police have like been abolished.
Right.
Like the people who feel like it's an extreme idea don't actually come into contact with
exactly
police that often. Like white people don't have to deal with police.
Right.
And that I felt was really meaningful because that's true in my life. I rarely have to deal with the police. Like for me, effectively, the police have already been abolished in my life.
Right.
And I felt like that was really just like a really interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah. And yeah, listeners, we just hope that you are all getting involved too in a big way, in a small way, in any way that works for you. I just think it's a really important thing that we all do.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, man, let's just get into this fucking scary ass movie that we're doing this week.
Spelunking.
Okay. Well, the other much less important thing that happened this week was it was my birthday. And
it was Samantha's birthday.
Very important. God, do we love Samantha. Ugh.
And I somehow convinced Henley to watch my favorite horror movie of all time with me, which is The Descent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I will say in the moment, we all agreed.
That's
to do
true.
That.
That's true.
And then one of us, me, backed out.
I was really worried for you, Emily, so I'm a little, I think it's for the best.
I really enjoyed myself, actually. I really enjoyed it. I surprised myself. I wasn't that scared.
I can't believe it. I've heard this movie is, like, ungodly scary.
I don't know whether this is okay to admit, but I did have Jenna and Sammy over to my house to watch it, and I was...
Well, you all don't have COVID. You got your test results back.
We did get tested.
Be safe, everyone.
That's true. That's true. I felt so comforted by their presence. And I really think that it eliminated a lot of the fear for me because I was wedged between two of my favorite people who also, you guys have such a deep love for this movie and have obviously seen it so many times. And so I had fair warning. Anytime anything remotely scary was about to happen. The movie is The Descent. Did we say that?
Yeah, I was going to say, let me give you some stats about the movie. The movie is The Descent. It came out in 2006. It was written and directed by Neil Marshall, starring Shauna McDonald, Natalie Mendoza, Alex Reed, Saskia Mulder, Mayanna Buring, and Nora Jane Noon.
This has been a movie. This is one of the movies that made you love horror, Sammy. Yes?
So the first time I saw this movie was I majored in film in college. And one of the things that we could do to get like a quick credit was to take a weekend film class where you would go and basically for 8 hours on Saturday and Sunday, just watch a bunch of movies of a certain genre and then write a paper on them. And so I took
to be in school. That sounds amazing. What? I want to be able to do that. School's wasted on the young.
It's true. But I took a horror film class and I wasn't a big horror fan at the time or anything. So in one day we watched The Descent, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Don't Look Now. And The Descent we watched first, and it was in a room of like a lecture hall of 700 people. And I just knew nothing about it and had no idea what to expect. And it was like probably the most fun viewing experience of my whole life. So that really set the tone for my relationship with this movie. And then after that, I'm someone who, when I love a movie, I like to make other people watch the movie with me. And so I think this was probably my 10th or so viewing of the film because I make everybody watch it with me.
Except for me.
Well, maybe after you hear about it, you'll want to watch it.
I honestly think I might want to watch it.
And I'll watch it again. I'll watch it again and again for the rest of my life. Hello, everybody. It is cocktail hour, and this week's cocktail is an Explorer Martini. And this is about the only thing that I'm comfortable exploring. To make this drink, you will need 1 ounce of Scotch whiskey, inspired by our Scottish protagonist, 1 ounce of DiSaronno, and 1 ounce of Amontillado sherry, or just any cream sherry will do. You will stir your ingredients with ice and strain into a chilled martini glass and garnish with a Luxardo maraschino cherry. Cheers. Let's do trivia. I don't have a lot.
We've talked about this. You've mentioned this before. The poster is awesome.
Poster rules.
It's a great poster.
Okay, so the director, Neil Marshall, is the director of Dog Soldiers, which is another movie that we get requested a lot. It's a werewolf horror film. I feel like those are few and far between. Don't see a lot of werewolf horrors. I've never seen it. Hopefully we'll do it on the pod one day. And obviously filming in caves is too dangerous. So all of these caves are built on sound stages, and there were 21 separate cave sets built for this film.
Holy shit.
Which I told Henley at the beginning to be like, they're on sound stages. Like,
that helped. That helped a lot, actually.
That is helpful. Caves are so scary and so dangerous.
I'm not doing that.
Have you ever been in a cave?
I have, actually. I went in Puerto Rico. I went on a few cave tours, and they were actually cool, but...
That's the thing. Caves are also really cool, but now that I know how scary they are, like, no thank you.
They seemed really safe, the ones that I was in, because they were very touristy, and you're never, like, that far subterranean or anything. This type of cave? No. I'm not doing that. Ever.
No, absolutely not. I think, yeah, the whole like adrenaline junkie thing, but then going into a cave just doesn't make any sense to me. It's like,
I'm so glad I'm not an adrenaline junkie.
Oh my God.
I am like so fucking glad that I do not need that whatsoever.
Me too.
This is interesting, and I don't think this is too much of a spoiler, but I'm sorry if it is. The appearance of the whatever is scary in this cave was kept completely secret from the cast members until the first scene in which they filmed it. So it was like a genuine surprise for the actors.
They love doing that in horror. They love having a little trick up their sleeve to fucking freak out there.
That would make me... I've been thinking lately that I feel like acting in horror movies would be so fucking fun, but that's the kind of shit... Like a Ready or Not type movie I would love to do. But yeah. Something like that, like, I think if I... ever did a horror movie, I truly would be so scared that they were gonna do some shit like that to me, and I would like not, I would be scared, I would be genuinely,
yeah,
they would think I was such a great actor because I would just be so fucking scared the whole time.
Well, okay, to tie into that, Shauna McDonald, who is our protagonist Sarah in the film, is actually claustrophobic, and so she said a lot of the scenes she's not really acting. She was just like, it was very easy to seem very scared because I was very scared.
And the thing about fear is when you start even acting fear, when you're like hyperventilating or like,
right, your body responds in a certain
like,
way,
you like actually get really freaked out. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's it gives me a lot of anxiety to think about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Should we watch the trailer?
Let's watch the trailer.
Yes!
Give me a smile.
Gino, are you sure we're going the right way?
I've never been lost in my life.
There's only one way out of this chamber, and that's down the pipe.
I can't breathe.
Okay, Sarah, you have to calm down. I'm coming back, okay? Okay. Okay, move! Now! Now! This is not good, guys.
We get out of here. Which way?
I don't know. Sarah thinks she saw someone back
there. Saw what?
I don't think I saw someone. I saw someone!
No, you heard something and you saw what you wanted to see. It's the dark. It plays tricks
some people.
Baby,
no way in hell I would have been able to watch that movie. Oh my god, it looks so scary. Holy shit,
it is.
It was really scary.
It is scary,
but in like a good way. I liked it.
It looks really good, but very, 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 very scary. Oh my, when that moment in the trailer where all of a sudden the light shines and there's a freaky face behind.
Yeah, Jenna and I used to, when we watched this in college, we used to have to watch, there's a blooper reel, and we had to watch the blooper reel afterwards because we'd be too scared and we needed to see them laughing and prove that they were just actors.
The blooper reel, we watched that last night, yeah, and it was worth it 100%. Definitely helps.
Pro tip to any of you who are feeling brave enough to watch it. By the end of this, there is a blooper reel. Check it out.
Ooh, wow.
Should we just get into it?
Let's get into it.
Wow, I am very excited.
I'm so excited. I love this movie so much. What a great birthday present.
I feel honored to get to try to recreate it with you, Sammy. I feel like I did not take any notes. And
that's okay. It's okay.
I had my eyes and ears half closed the whole entire time, but I'm going to do my best.
That's okay. I've seen it many times. I'll lead the way.
Okay.
You know that scene in horror movies where someone's alone at home, cooking or whatever, watching TV, and a killer is outside watching them through their huge, open, enormous, completely clear windows that for some reason have no blinds or coverings on them whatsoever? Don't let that be you. You need privacy. You need 3-day blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of custom window treatments in the US, and right now they are running a buy one, get one 50% off deal. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. And if you're not very handy, that's not a problem, because the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles all the heavy lifting. They design, measure, and install, so you can sit back, relax, and leave it to the pros. I feel like sometimes when you hear the word blinds, you might be thinking of broken, loud, dirty dorm room blinds, but I was just looking at 3-Day Blinds' Instagram, and I can assure you that is not what we are talking about here. These are good-looking blinds, shades, shutters, etc. They have thousands of options for any budget or style, no matter your unique need, whether it's motorization, to home automation, room darkening, or child safety. They're going to have something that's going to look gorgeous in your home, and it's going to keep those prying eyes away so you don't have to live in your very own horror movie. Right now, you can get 3-Day Blinds buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. That's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to 3dayblinds.com/too scary. One last time, that's the number 3daiblinds.com/too scary.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Okay.
So we open on three women whitewater rafting. By the way, they all did their own stunts, these actresses. Mm-hmm. They were whitewater rafting for real.
They're all athletes. You can tell they're all like the kind of women who played varsity sports in college, mm-hmm. and are like mm-hmm. really cool about it, you know?
Their names are Sarah. Sarah is our protagonist. Juno and Beth are these three that we meet. And Sarah's husband and daughter are watching from the side of the river, kind of cheering them on, and they're having fun. And so they then get to the shore. The husband helps them out. He's helping Juno. Sarah goes to her daughter, gives her a kiss. They're, you know, everyone's happy and feeling good. This whole movie's going to be happy, we think, probably.
I think probably, yeah. This is going to be a movie about the aftermath of a fun whitewater rafting day.
I don't know whether it was just me, but it didn't feel like it was... it didn't feel like it was immediately making you feel dread in the beginning of this movie. Like, there's a lot of this movie that is actually genuinely, it feels like heartwarming. And there's something about it that feels like it's just from the 90s, even though it was made in 2005.
There was a point in which we said, it looks like Homeward Bound.
Yeah. Oh, I know exactly what you mean.
Yes.
Yes. I can picture the river. Now I know exactly where we are.
Mm-hmm.
But I will. I think the pacing in this film is what makes it so good and feels so special to me.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get into, I guess, the reasons why. But I think it's like one of the most well-paced films ever. Beth says to Sarah, "Okay, you guys head back. We'll meet you." Sarah gets in the car with her husband and daughter, and they're driving back to wherever. And her husband's being kind of weird and
just like quiet. Yeah.
And she turns to him and says, "Are you okay? You seem a bit distant." And then right at that moment, we see a car coming and he's not looking at the road, and they get in a big accident, and copper like piping flies from the other. It was like a truck that was carrying basically like plumbing stuff, and those fly through the windshield, go straight through the husband's head, and also kills her daughter. And so she wakes up in the hospital and it's dark and she doesn't know what's happened yet, and kind of walks out into the hallway and looks at one end of the hallway and the lights start turning off behind her. And she's kind of running and the darkness is catching up with her, and she's running and running and running. And then it cuts to kind of reality where it's just a normal lit hospital hallway. And she runs into the arms of Beth, her best friend, who says to her, "She's gone, she's gone." And she just like collapses and is like sobbing in her friend's arms. And everybody in the hospital is really just walking by like nothing's happening.
This was a deeply unrealistic part of the movie, was just the extras not giving a flying fuck about this woman who's having a full emotional breakdown. Yeah. In the middle of the hallway. Like, several people are just walking by chatting, like, no big deal.
But it's incredibly sad. I cried. I cry every time. I almost cried just talking about it.
It's really sad. She's a really good actress, I think.
She's very good. And then we cut to kind of an overhead of a forest drone looking shot. And we get a lower third saying the Appalachian Mountains, USA, 1 year later.
Mm-hmm.
And Beth and Sarah are driving together. And Beth is kind of saying to Sarah, "You know, you don't have to do this. We could turn back." And Sarah says, "Yeah, Juno would be pretty pissed if we did that." And so we understand that Juno's kind of organized this weekend for them or whatever it is. And as she says, Juno came to Scotland last year, so it's only fair. And Beth says, "Yeah, she left pretty fucking quick, though."
Mm.
Just a little like we're getting some jabs at Juno.
Like, maybe when this tragedy happened, she didn't fully stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. So then we get to the cabin that they've rented. They're basically in the middle of nowhere. And we meet Rebecca and Sam, who are sisters. Sam is a medical student. And she says something like, "I'm so sorry." That her and Sarah have a nice little moment where Sarah's like, "Your card was really, really touching. It really meant a lot to me to hear from you." And Sam says, "I'm so sorry I couldn't be there, but you with medical school," midterms, I think is what she says.
She says midterms, which I think dilutes the argument. Midterms don't seem serious enough to not come to the funeral of your good friend's husband and daughter, but I'm not in medical school, so I can't speak to that directly.
So we find out Sam is in medical school and Rebecca is her older sister, who says something like, I'm so proud of, like, she's such a genius, my little sister. So they have a cute dynamic where Rebecca is this protective older sister. And then we meet Holly, who they introduce her as Juno's protege. And she's this big adrenaline junkie. She comes in like high energy. She's like, oh, yeah, like I did base jumping. You got to try base jumping. Oh, also, I should mention they all have great accents. Holly is Irish. Sarah is Scottish. Juno's American. I think Rebecca and Sam are British.
They also all have very thin eyebrows.
Oh, yeah. Very 2005 eyebrows.
Baby.
Mm-hmm. It's really noticeable. It's like, whoa, eyebrows, they go through phases.
Yeah.
Wow, eyebrows have changed.
They have. They really have.
Mm-hmm.
And so Holly says something to Sarah like, oh, Juno's told me so much about you. And like, I know you did a lot of base jumping and whatnot. You're quite the adrenaline junkie as well. She was showing me photos. And Sarah's a little embarrassed. And Juno pulls out a photo like, I was showing her this, and it's a photo of them, Juno, Beth and Sarah. And as Sarah's looking at it, she kind of to herself almost says, love each day. And they're like, what? And she says, oh, it's just something Paul used to say. So it's like something her husband used to say.
Takes on a whole new meaning when your husband and daughter died in the same moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then they're kind of like getting drunk, partying the night before. Tomorrow they're going to Borum Caverns. And Holly is outside with Sam smoking a cigarette, saying like Borum Caverns, more like Boredom Caverns. Like they're going to be so lame. And Juno comes out kind of slyly like, when have I ever let you down? Holly, like, trust me on this one. It's gonna be, you're gonna have a good time. I'd say you were already like a little suspicious of Juno at this point, right, Henley?
Yeah, I can't tell if it's because you guys primed me for that.
That's true.
By accident.
I guess we were like fucking Juno.
Yeah, you guys like hated Juno from the beginning, but
I mean, I hadn't heard fucking Juno, but I already am like, okay, like, Calm down, Juno.
I think she is a little suspicious.
Their conversation between Beth and Sarah in the beginning about Juno primes
yes.
you a little
yeah.
bit.
Yes.
And then Juno, yeah, Juno's a little annoying.
Yeah, we kind of are getting the feeling that she's not the greatest friend. Maybe she's a little like out for herself.
Do we know or will we find out how all these women know each other? They're just like,
no, and actually what I like a lot also about this movie is that it doesn't really over explain anything. And truly each time I feel like I notice a new thing. So no, we don't know why they are friends. They're just some adrenaline junkies that found each other. Birds of a feather
just
flock
friends.
Together.
Yeah, that was something else we were talking about, is how people who have similar interests really do become friends. And it's like, wow, I have zero friends.
Especially activity friends.
Zero friends who are activity friends, because I'm not an activity friend. But also, just one more comment on Juno. Maybe this is like beating a dead horse at this point, but her coming out and being like, have I ever let you down, to a group where you know they're about to go through like a horrific experience, makes me feel like she's slightly responsible for whatever's about to happen.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's also like, what aren't you telling us, Juno?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just say what you mean.
Yeah, say what you fucking mean.
So another thing to point out is Juno is wearing a huge metal feather necklace. And after she comes out and talks to Holly and Sam, they go back inside and she like kisses the feather necklace. And I think we had some comments about it. It's just like a very huge necklace. It's just really big.
Very huge.
It's hard to not notice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and she kissed it, so she's really drawn attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's nighttime, everyone's going to bed, and Sarah is in a room with Beth, and she can't sleep, gets up, looks out the window, it's dark outside, and she's just kind of like moving closer and closer to the window to squint, to look outside, and then a big piece of copper piping goes slams through her head and she wakes up and it was a nightmare. Big jump scare.
First big jump. Well, second big jump scare.
Yeah. And then we go to the next morning and it's the day of our big descent, spelunking day.
The descent.
Sarah, just one thing to point out is she takes a couple pills when she wakes up from her nightmare.
Mm-hmm. And so some of them, like Rebecca's pretty hungover, which I like. They drink a lot the night before. Juno is like super full of energy, like let's go. Like she's the type of person that woke up 2 hours before everybody else to go for a run.
Yuck.
But they all start gearing up. They get in the car. We're driving to Borum Caverns, apparently. We're getting some exposition from Rebecca, who's kind of seemingly like wants to know all the information about things. And she's like, well, Borum Caverns only a level 2, like it should be, you know, relatively simple. We'll get in and everything will be pretty straightforward. And then they approach the entrance to the cave, which is like this huge hole in the ground, basically. And they start setting up their gear and rappelling down into it. And so they get to the first, I don't know cave terminology, but the first part of the cave. They've rappelled down into this opening.
The opening of the cave. Mm-hmm.
It's probably like 50 feet down.
The mouth
of the cave.
Yeah, they probably rappel like 50 feet down.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, somewhere in here, Rebecca, I'd say Rebecca is like the mom of the group, I guess is what I would call her. And so she's kind of keeps saying like warnings to people, like, you think it's dark when the lights are out, like down there, it's pitch black. And you can get claustrophobia, you can get paranoia, you can hallucinate, you can have panic attacks, like stay close to each other. Like it's no joke.
It's very beautiful, though, in the beginning. The mouth of the cave is gorgeous. The light shining through and there's water dripping in a kind of romantic way. It's all very nice.
And they're all kind of taking it in and kind of exploring their own little corner of this first part of the cave. And Sarah notices what looks to be a bloody handprint. But before she can tell anybody about it, a bunch of bats explode out of the side of the cave to fly out the mouth of the cave and scare her so bad. And she starts really freaking out and panicking. And they have to they run up and they're like, it's okay. It's just bats. Like, relax. We see that Holly has a camcorder. She's filming it. And they calm Sarah down and she forgets to mention that bloody handprint.
Her hand like fits perfectly into it, too. It's so like alarming. It's like, that's not a good
sign. That's not good. And then Juno says, OK, the only way out is through. Like, we got to.
Oh, we missed an important thing. Sorry, Sammy.
Oh, yeah. No, it's OK.
When they all got out of the car to go into the cave, a Juno has a guidebook.
Yes.
And she puts the guidebook, she looks at it and she puts it away. She puts it in the glove box.
More suspicious Juno activity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay, now they're tunneling through, climbing through the first tunnel. And this movie has quite prolonged tunnel sequences. Like, it's not like a quick, like, cut and we're on the other side. It's like
they really make you feel it being in that tunnel.
Yeah, it's showing each of them one at a time going through the same thing. The first one isn't too small. It's like enough that they can walk through. It's tight, but they're kind of like squeezing through it and walking.
Also good at this moment to remind yourself that they're on a soundstage. This is when it starts to be important to remember this isn't a real cave, because that's just too scary.
So they all make it through the first tunnel system and now they're in another kind of opening clearing in the cave, and now it's pitch black because there's no daylight. And so they have the lights of their helmets and they have some flares, and so they light up a flare to kind of get their bearings, see where they are. And it's this big open room.
Why would anyone want to do this?
It's so scary. I don't know.
But it's really fun to see a movie that's lit like this, though. I mean, you don't see movies that are all just completely dark. Pitch black.
Yeah, that's a big part of making Henley watch this, I was adamant that we had to watch it at complete nighttime because it's very dark. Mm-hmm. And it just, listeners, don't you dare watch this movie in the daytime. It's cheating.
I mean, you wouldn't even be able to see it because of like the glare. Yeah. It would be impossible to even see what was happening.
And so they light up their flare. They're looking around. Holly is kind of saying, oh, this is a lot cooler than I thought. She's taking photos. We're eating our lunch.
Oh, yeah. They take a lunch break right away. This is the fun and games portion.
Yeah.
Lunch break. Yeah.
Lunch break. And Sarah hears something. Sarah's the only person who is seemingly tuned into her surroundings. And so she's kind of has her flashlight and she thinks she hears something and she's looking around. There's nothing there. Everyone else is kind of oblivious, just still having a good time. So they finish their lunch and they have to look for the next passage. And the way they do that is they hold a lighter up to each tunnel. And whenever there's a draft, it'll make the lighter kind of either go out or flicker or whatever. Hmm. So they find a tunnel with a draft. And they say, okay, we found the next passage. We have to crawl through here. And this passage is way smaller. It's very tight. You need to army crawl through it. And even that, it's hard. And it goes through water at one point. So you have to army crawl through this big puddle. And so you get soaking wet.
Do we get an idea of how long they think they're going to be in this cave? Like, how long did they plan to?
I think they think they'll be done in the day. I mean, at like 8 hours, I would assume.
Right. Okay. The day trip.
Trip, I think, is the plan.
It's definitely a day trip. I mean, the fact that they're so willing to go through water. I mean, they're not
for more than a day.
that says a day trip
for
me.
24 hours.
Their willingness to just completely drench themselves in water was.
Yeah. Henley had a big problem with that.
I didn't like it.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It was just like so deeply uncomfortable. If you know you're going to be like hiking and doing physical activity for long periods of time, but also be wet.
Right.
Like, ugh, it sounds awful.
Yeah. And I think this is probably one of the most stressful scenes in the movie. So I believe Holly goes first. Holly's a real go-getter and she's very excited. She's leading the way. And again, this is drawn out. This is, I'm thinking, probably a 4 minutes long of watching them one at a time crawl through these really, really small confined spaces lit only with their headlamps. So it's super dark. We're seeing the dust in the air. It's very claustrophobic. And Sarah is last. And as she is kind of near getting through to the end, she gets stuck and she starts to panic. And Beth was right before her. So Beth turns around and is like, I think Sarah might be stuck. She's not following me. And Beth turns around to face Sarah. And Sarah's like, I'm stuck. And she's like, breathe with me. Like, look at me. Don't panic. It's okay. Like, look at me. And
Beth is a really, really good friend.
Beth is a very good friend. And Sarah's really losing it and starting to cry and really panic. And Beth says, the worst thing that could ever happen to you has already happened. Like, why are you, what are you scared of? And is like, okay, it's okay. You can move. You just got to relax. And she's doing a really good job trying to calm her down. And Sarah we see that she is calming down for a second. And then she has a rope bag with her. And so she's like starting to climb or crawl forward more. And then she's like, oh, the rope bag. I forgot the rope bag behind me. So that's like where their equipment is, their ropes and their, I don't know, claspy things that you use for cave exploring. Sure. And so just as she's kind of turning back to go grab the rope bag, we hear basically the sound of a rock slide and things start tumbling and it just sounds bad. And so Beth looks at her and is like, fuck the rope bag, get out right now. Music gets crazy. The cave starts collapsing behind where Sarah was. We see rocks fall in the tunnel behind her. She moves at last second, gets out of the cave or gets out of the tunnel in time. It completely smashes and all this dust comes out. All six of them are like coughing with all the dust in the air and they're like, don't move, don't move, wait till the dust settles. But they all made it out. They all made it out and they're all alive. But
the opening is completely closed. Like where they all just, where they just crawled through is completely donezo bunzo.
Right.
It's not available anymore. Yeah.
And I think Sam says, well, there's three, Borum Caverns has three entrances and three exits. So like, we'll be okay, right? And Rebecca had been a little suspicious earlier. I can't remember when, but she kind of has been like up on Juno's shit and she turns to Juno and says, yeah, if this were Borum Caverns, but this isn't Borum Caverns, is it, Juno? And Juno is like, Borum Caverns would have been really boring. I like Holly was right. That would have been a real tourist trap. I wanted us to do something more exciting. And so they're like, well, where the fuck are we? And she's like, this is an unexplored cave. It's not on.
No.
Yeah. She's like, I wanted us to do something. I wanted us to see it together for the first time. I wanted us to be the first ones to see it.
And Sam says something earlier where she's like, I put people will come for us. I put in a plan for Borum Caverns. And they're like, oh, yeah, no, those people will go to the wrong cave. Like people will come looking for them in the wrong spot. And so they're fucking pissed at Juno. And they're like, this is a fucking ego trip. Don't act like this was something you like a nice thing you wanted to do for your friends. Like, fuck you.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's not okay. So then they're like, our only option is to push forward, yeah. Which I immediately disagree with. And I was like, try to like dig your way out first. Like, well, you don't know what's ahead of you. Like, go backwards.
Right.
Yeah. This is an unexplored cave. We literally have no clue. Oh God, what a fucking nightmare.
Like it could be endless.
But so as everyone's kind of yelling at each other, Sarah again is looking into kind of the corners of the cave. She's hearing something again. It's kind of a rattly sound, almost insecty. Again, I guess doesn't mention them to anybody.
Okay, great, great. Loving this.
So we're all pissed off now, but we have to keep moving forward. And so they find this next passage. They basically have to climb across the ceiling of part of the cave. It's a huge drop. They throw a stone down and it takes forever to make a noise. So there's a huge drop. But they can see a tunnel on the other side of this. So they have to climb across the ceiling to get to the other side of this particular pathway. And
like bouldering shit, like rock climbing.
They have climbing gear, which they can insert into the crevices of. And so basically, who's the first one to go?
It's Rebecca.
Rebecca's the first one to go. And she kind of inserts these metal hooks into the.
Right, right. And they hook themselves as they go.
But she, because she is putting the path there for the rest of them, she is basically just doing it.
Free climbing.
Freehand. I guess she's probably tied in, so she would fall back to them. But.
Or the last hook that she put up. Yeah.
Yeah, but so she.
Yeah.
And she's having to hold up her whole body weight with just like one arm at a time. And her performance in this scene is great where she's just like, it looks so hard. Mm-hmm. And she looks so strong doing it. And she's like screaming and like, ah, like one thing at a time, like putting the next thing in. And it's like life or death. Like she has to just she has to keep going forward. And as she's almost to the other side, she's about to put one more of her little clippy things in. She sees one that's already there. And It's a super old style of a clip, but there is one there. So someone has climbed here before. And so she's like, she's super weak, about to drop. And so she just is like, fuck it, I'll use this thing. She clips her carabiner into that and uses that as like the final thing to get her to the other side, then throws the rope back, and they'll basically all like zip line across. And so they go one at a time, each of them coming across. Juno and Sarah are the last two to go. Sarah ziplines across and is thinking that Juno will also zipline across. But Juno says, because we lost that other rope bag, we can't afford to leave any gear behind. So she's going to now again climb across the top of this cave to take back all of the clamps that Rebecca has put up. So one at a time, pulling them out.
Also, just their blind commitment to moving forward just never makes sense to me. I'm just like, don't they take very small amounts of time for decision making. And I think that's like a power to them as a group. Like, it's impressive that they're able to like make decisions as a group as effectively as they do. But at the same time, it's like, I would be the one in the group being like, let's not just blindly move forward. Maybe we should think about like trying to go back.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I feel like that thing was pretty caved in, and it's pretty a long tunnel.
I would just think it would be up for discussion a little bit.
Also, like, they don't know that there's another exit, right? So like,
yeah, exactly. They could just be
going into their, I mean, I think that they exactly. will be, aside from the monsters that I think are coming, they could just be climbing into their own inevitable death.
Exactly.
But like, they'll run out of food and time. And even if
and she says,
you know,
at one point, like, the batteries on our helmets are going to run out. Like there is a time constraint and we do need to like be moving forward.
Fuck Juno.
So Juno is taking back each clamp thing one at a time, same thing, like holding her whole body weight from one arm, which is just like, I don't know, have I ever done that? I guess I have, yeah, on like monkey bars, but it just looks really hard.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to do.
On the second to last one, it slips. She slips and it collapses and she falls down, and Rebecca was holding the rope. And it slides through her hands really quickly. And you know, when rope slides through your hands really quickly, it slices her hands open. So she's like screaming, somebody else grabs it. And then Juno is only held by the one the clamp that was previously there, but she's like fallen to the side of the cave thing. I don't know the terminology of caves. I'm so sorry. I feel like I'm not doing a great job finding the right words for how to explain
all
a cave.
Our really cave centric listeners are gonna be so pissed off.
The cave wall.
Yeah, and so they got her. She didn't fall, and they pull her back in. But Rebecca is screaming in pain. Her palms are sliced open real deep, pouring blood. We get a good look at those. Everyone's kind of in shock. They grab the other thing that was left there by a previous climber. They pull it out, and someone is like, this is a good sign, right? If someone's been here before, maybe that means that there is a way out. And Juno says, this thing is definitely over 100 years old. Nobody uses equipment like this. And if someone had been here before, this cavern would be named. Like, nobody, like, these people didn't make it out, basically.
Cool, Juno. Thanks.
Like, thanks for the optimism, Juno. Thanks.
That's
we feel
helpful.
So much better.
We love this.
But they gotta keep moving forward. So Rebecca bandages up her hands and they keep moving, and they make it to another little clearing. And they see some cave paintings, like the, you know, traditional like buffalo kind of cave drawings. They light up a flare, and the drawing is of the mountain that they're in, basically. And they see that in this cave painting, there are two entrances into this cave. And so she says,
okay. That's some helpful
yes,
art.
There is another way out.
It's very helpful.
And so
art.
We get a little bit of hope now. Like, okay, there is another way out. We're going to fucking find it. Let's do it. Oh my God. And then right after this, we see them walking away and the camera pulls out to like show from behind part of the cave, and we see a nasty golem man.
No.
Wait, doesn't Sarah see
No,
him?
Not yet.
I thought that was the not first yet. Time. Oh, I missed this then. I didn't see the
It's just
man
for
yet.
The audience. And I will say it is about 40 minutes into the movie, which is close to halfway through.
Yeah, so I have known that there are monsters in this cave from just hearing you tell me about it. But like, as a first time viewer, you have no idea that that's even an element of this movie, right?
Yeah. So when I saw it for the first time, I had no idea. And I really went into it blind and was like, this is just a fucking scary movie about paranoia and claustrophobia in caves. And even then, it's scary. And yeah, then when there became these golemy guys, I was...
Golemy guys!
I was not happy.
They're adorable little golem men. They're so cute.
Oh my
cute.
God, little cutie golem. Do they have goat feet? Friendly?
If only, then they'd be my perfect man.
A golem with goat hooves.
I love it. A blind little cave golem with
Look
goat
out,
hooves.
Look out, Tim. She's ready to get swept off her feet.
You guys know what to get me for my bachelorette party.
A golem stripper.
Bunch of strippers.
That's going to be easy to find. But okay, so then they're like, all right, that's we've got a new sense of hope. Well, let's keep moving forward.
If there's one thing I know about hope in horror movies,
it always ends up good.
It's always going to be mm-hmm. the right feeling. And it's going to be fine. And the hope is correct. Thank God.
So they do the old lighter trick. They're holding up the lighter to each of these few different tunnels. And one of them flickers. Juno's like, it's this tunnel on the left. And Holly runs through it. It's like, fuck yeah. I'm desperate to get out of here. She's moving way too fast. Juno is yelling like, slow down, Holly. You can't like run through caves where you don't know. It's like dark. You're going to get hurt. Holly doesn't care. She's running. And then she sees daylight. Like she sees blue light that's not like the light from their helmets. And she's like, I see daylight. I see daylight. Juno screams, that's not daylight, Holly. Slow down. Stop. And Holly slips into this opening in the ground. Juno gets there just in time, grabs her hand. And she's kind of dangling off the edge of this hole in the ground that we don't know how deep this hole goes. And Holly slips and falls, and we see her body hit all the like walls of this hole as she falls down it. Juno calls everybody else like, come on, come on, Holly fell. They quickly set up a rope to rappel down to Holly. We are with Holly down there. We see her leg. She says, I think I hurt my leg. We get a look at the leg. The bone is jutting out of her shin.
Mm-hmm. The bone is fully jutting out. This is pretty gruesome.
It's bad.
This is not good.
But so they all rappel down. And, you know, luckily Sam is a med student. We set that up.
Right. And she took her midterms. Thank God.
Yeah, this was on the midterm.
She's a good student.
And so she says, I have to, you know, push it back into place and we're going to need to splint it. You're not going to be able to walk on it, but I need to push it back into place. And she makes her bite down on a little strap thing.
Never a good sign. Never a good
sign. And clicks her leg bone back into place, and it's so gross.
And it is, we were commenting on this, this part is a little like unrealistic. She gets her hand, like her fingers, like into the bone, and you're like, that just feels like not what you
would
do.
Well, it's almost like it's like not moving the way that she wants to move, so she like sticks her hand basically into her shin and is like wiggling her bone around. It's so nasty.
It's so gross.
It's so gross.
And no. It's just a reminder of like, if anyone ever tells me to bite down on anything because of pain,
what's gonna come next is bad.
Just kill me. Yeah. Now that's fine.
How about instead you kill me?
But these are badass adrenaline junkie girls, so
no, they're
they're more mentally equipped than we would be.
So wait, what was the light that she saw that wasn't
so
daylight?
So at some point, Juno says it's phosphorus in the rocks.
Sure.
But okay, so they're putting a splint into Holly's leg. So they have these like pickaxe things. So they break the tip off one of the pickaxes so they can have the handle part to be her splint. They're wrapping that up. And while they're doing that, again, Sarah is looking around the sides of this new part of the cave that they're in. And she finds a kind of colonial looking helmet. And just like not of this era.
Or even older. It looked like ancient Greek to me. It's like a metal helmet that looks like something like Achilles would have worn.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then as she's looking at it, hears something and shines her flashlight and sees a little creepy golem man drinking drinking water.
Like the cutest little golem you've ever seen. He's like such a cute little like.
And I guess some more descriptors would be that this is like a human man sized thing. It's not as small as Gollum. So Gollum is a little bit misleading. It's big.
Sure.
It's the size of a human man. It's pale. She looks at it. She looks really scared. And then right as she has the flashlight on it, it runs away and goes out of sight. And then Juno is right there. And it's like another little jump scare where Juno's like, what did you see? And Sarah tells her, I saw a man. There's a man down here. She says, like, maybe he can help us get out of here, which is like, Sarah, sweetie.
Oh, my dear.
I know. That was a really fun reaction to. Yeah,
I think absolutely not.
She was like, we should try to track him down. He might be able to help us or no way out.
If you're deep in the pit of a cave, and a naked
man-sized golem is drinking water,
hairless,
like if a newt were a man, runs away from you, he's not your friend.
He's not the ticket out of here.
He's not a sign that things are going to get better.
And then they're all kind of like, well, okay, you know, regardless, we need to get Holly out of here right now. Like, we need to get to hospital.
We all need to get fucking out of here right now. Jesus.
So they start climbing back up and they get to this new landing and it's very dark at first and you can't see what they're on. But as I think Sarah gets up there first, and she has now the camcorder, which has a night vision setting. And so she turns on the night vision and she sees what they're standing on is just a ton of bones. It's all animal bones, ribs, skulls, spines. I think Juno again has her lighter out and she's like, which tunnel? There's like a few separate ways they could go. She's like, which way do we go? We need to get the fuck out of here. She's holding up the lighter to each one of them and nothing is happening at each one. There's no breeze anywhere. And she's like, I don't know. Like, it's a crapshoot. We could go down any of them. There's no way to know which one is good. And then they're like panicking. They're freaking out. Sarah's looking through the camcorder, going back and forth between Rebecca.
So wait, is this back where they were above the hole, or this is a new spot they've never
been
in?
It's a new spot they've never been in.
Okay.
And she's panning the camera back and forth between Rebecca and Beth, and Rebecca's yelling, hello, is there anybody there? Help us, anybody? And then the camera pans back to Beth, and fucking scary ass man is leaning over her shoulder. It runs away in that moment. They all start screaming. And then we see there are a few of them and they run in a really not human way. They're kind of defying gravity, kind of like crawling on the walls and stuff. Like
We think the timing, I think they changed like the
frame rate.
Because all of a sudden it becomes like right. Very like fast. Like
spidery.
Yeah, they're spidery.
Like, yeah.
And so they all kind of group together in the center of this new part of the cave as they're hearing these creatures basically surround them. They're freaking out. No one's making a move. It's this face off. And they basically have to just pick a tunnel and run. They're like, okay, let's just fucking pick one. Let's go. Sarah picks one. they make a run for it. And as they go in it, one of the creatures pops up in front of her. There's all this commotion, and basically they all split up and go different directions.
No!
And Rebecca and Sam stay together. Beth gets separated and she's on her own and she's running in one direction. No. Sarah falls and hits her head really hard. And then we see Juno trying to kind of protect Holly, because Holly can't walk. Mm-hmm. Like, Holly needs someone to help carry her. And so Juno's trying to do that. And then the monsters come and grab Holly from her. And she's like chasing after her, trying to save her. And we see one of the monsters basically rip Holly's throat out. She dies.
Yeah, Holly is.
She dies hard.
It's not good.
They
awful.
Like toss her on the ground and leave her for a second. Juno comes back up to try to save her.
So they're not even eating her. They're just
Well, they come
us.
Back. They like come back in a few different
I
stages.
Think they eat her.
And so then as Juno kind of gets closer to her to try to see if she's alive, she's not. She's dead. The monster pops back in and is like, fuck you, get away from my prey. And they get in a big fight. And so now Juno is like,
Juno goes hand to hand,
basically hand to hand combat. Yeah. But she also has her pickaxe. Like, each of them has a pickaxe, but in their hand to hand combat, it like flies out of her hand, of course. And so she like knocks one away, and I don't know, I think it runs away, and then another one jumps on her back. So now there's two, and she's fighting with this one now, and it's going at her, and she's like getting closer to her pickaxe, reaching for it, like trying to get it, and at the last second gets it, hits him a bunch of times and kills this thing. And she's like like in a fit of like panic and
adrenaline.
She's standing there. We see from a camera angle something approaching her. And she senses it coming, and she turns around with her pickaxe, stabs it through the throat, and it's Beth.
Oh my fucking God.
But she doesn't die right away. Like, Beth is like alive and choking on this thing and just like breathing, raggedly breathing and staring at Juno for a long extended period of time.
She drops to her knees, and as she falls, she reaches for Juno and she grabs that big nasty metal feather necklace and grabs it off of her neck and falls to the ground and kind of holding this necklace. And Juno looks just so freaked out, but doesn't do anything. And she just leaves. She just keeps moving.
She does look very scared.
She looks in complete shock.
Fucking Christ.
But she does just leave her too.
So now, okay, so Juno's by herself. Sarah is also by herself, and she comes to, again, having a horrible realization. Henley said something like, just like the waking up, knowing that things are so bad, like having a brief moment of reprieve, being unconscious, and then being like, oh my God, here I am.
Still in a cave
in
with
the
monsters.
Fucking pit of this cave.
And now I have a goddamn headache.
Yeah.
And it's not even, like the worst thing hasn't already happened to you. I mean, maybe it has, but it's not going to get much better. But she has the camcorder.
Yes.
Sarah has a camcorder, so she can use that as light. So when she wakes up, she has that. And very quickly, what happens is that the little golem creatures drag Holly's body like into the space where Sarah is and just start eating her.
Yeah, it looks like their feeding area.
And Sarah is just sitting there watching through the camcorder this happen. It's all very close proximity in a way that's like crazy that the creatures don't realize she's there, but they're blind.
Aha.
And I guess deaf? Like, it's crazy to me. Maybe they're not deaf, but I think that you were saying that they can only...
They're not deaf. We don't know this yet, but they...
They're like bats?
Yeah, there's a point in which they say they hunt with sound.
Mm-hmm.
But, so she's watching, through the camera, I think she's gagging.
She's also trying not to throw up because she's fucking had a concussion.
Oh my God.
So at some point she makes a like gagging noise and one of the creatures turns to face her and is so close to her face and she's looking at it through the camcorder and we see that its eye is, yeah, like milky white. Like it's not, there's no pupil.
Like deep, dark cave creatures.
Exactly.
Who don't mm-hmm. need vision because it's mm-hmm. so deep
yep.
and dark.
Yep, yep, yep. So they eat Holly for the most part and then go on their way. And Sarah goes to Holly's body and takes the base of the pickaxe that they had used for a splint for her and like takes that off of her leg, which is like a really awful moment of her like having to like take this thing off of her friend's dead body. And she wraps a piece of clothing around the top of it. And I guess they have some sort of gasoline or lighter fluid. She pours that on, lights it up. So she has a torch now because it's a completely pitch black in there, except for her being able to see through the camcorder. Then we go back to Rebecca and Sam in a totally different part of the cave. And they hear one of the things coming and they just decide to huddle together silently and kind of lay down. And the monster, one of the cave monsters, like crawls over them and completely passes them. But they get a good look at it. I think it actually stops like right in front of them and they get a good look at it. And same thing, see that its eyes, there's no pupil. Like it's just, everything is white. Their skin is white. Everything is like the same, like almost translucent. Like nasty cave fucking creatures.
Yeah, I'm picturing like little cave salamanders.
Mm-hmm, but not as cute.
I don't know. They sound pretty cute to me.
It passes them. It doesn't see them. And then as it's past them, Sam's watch alarm goes off, like a timer, and it's like beep 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 beep, and the creature turns back and is like lunging towards them, and she's frantically like trying to undo the watch, like fuck 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 fuck. She gets it off at the last second, throws it, and so the creature gets to it, sniffs it, sees that there's nothing there, and he's like, okay, whatever.
So they're dumb. They're pretty dumb.
Yeah, okay.
Then Juno is by herself, obviously, and discovers arrows. Like she like lights up the cave wall and she sees that there are markings of arrows pointed right. in a certain direction.
Like someone has marked a path.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we go back to Rebecca and Sam. And then one of the monsters pops out of them again. They get in a fight. Rebecca is like fighting this cave monster and losing. She's not doing well. And then we hear like a and a pickaxe like goes into its back and we see that Juno has thrown an axe at it. Juno walks up to it and snaps its neck like with her hands. And she looks
like a real fucking badass, just like whoop.
She says, I think she says they got Holly and Beth is dead, specifically mm-hmm. phrasing it in such a way.
Yeah, to cover her tracks.
And so then Juno says, I think I found a way out. I saw some arrows on the mm-hmm. walls, but I'm not leaving without Sarah. We've got to find Sarah. And so then we go back to Sarah and she's got her torch now. She's moving through what seems to be like the pit, like the main pit of their like feeding area. It's like bones everywhere. It's blood everywhere. It's like so nasty. And as she's kind of climbing through here, a hand pops out and she goes over to it and it is Beth. And Beth is not dead. She is just like bleeding from her throat and still like gurgling on her blood like.
Oh, God.
And Sarah says, it's okay. It's okay. I'm like, I'm going to find Juno. We're going to get you out of here. And Beth is like, no, don't find Juno. Except it's like.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't think Juno was trying to kill her.
No, and I do think this is unfair. I think it is unfair, but she does act like she says, she did this to me. Don't trust her. Mm-hmm. I think what she is trying to say is like, Juno only fucking cares about herself. And that much we know. She's not thinking mm-hmm. about anybody else's well-being, obviously. And so, like, don't put your life in her hands because she's not going to look out for you.
Well, she also, I mean, Juno did almost kill her and then just leave her to die. It's not like she, like, right, she tried did to leave save her.
She left her she to die. She did not even ask one follow-up question like, are you okay?
No, she just left her there to be eaten by the crazy cave monsters. At this point, Beth then hands Sarah the necklace, and Sarah looks at the necklace, and on the back, the necklace she'd grabbed from Juno, and on the back of this goddamn gaudy-ass feather that she's been wearing around her neck, it says, in big quotes, love each day. So the implication obviously being Sarah's husband gave it to Juno because they were having an affair.
And Sarah looks like, no, 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 please, no. And Beth is like giving her this face like, yeah, like, don't fucking trust her.
Mm-hmm, like, she is a sneaky ass
bitch. So, okay. So this is probably why she didn't stick around.
Yeah.
Because she was also mourning the loss of her lover. And that's why her husband was being quiet after the water rafting.
Yep.
What a bad moment to learn this.
I know.
Also, Juno, you wore that fucking necklace?
Yeah, that's pretty stupid.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
that makes me think she is like kind of a psychopath.
Also, the fact that husband, you have a signature quote. First of all, crazy. Second of all, you give jewelry to your mistress with your signature quote on it, and she hangs out with your wife. You're all insane.
Bad move for sure.
None of it's good. None of it's good.
So
suddenly this movie becomes like kind of a revenge movie. Like, all of a sudden it pivots and it's like, oh, Sarah, shit has gotten real for Sarah.
Yeah, things are just getting worse and worse for Sarah, and she's losing her
Sarah's
shit more and more.
Sarah's not had a good time.
No.
No, this year has been bad.
This year has been
it's
really
been a
tough.
Bad year for Sarah.
And then Beth says, please kill me, basically. She's like, I'm suffering and please kill me. And Sarah's like, no, like, I can't. Do that. Don't ask me to do that. And she's like, please don't leave me here.
Sammy, no.
Oh my God. And it's so hard. And so
she does, right?
She does. To. And so she says, close your eyes. And she picks up a big rock and she smashes her head with it. And so right after this, Sarah is kind of sitting stunned. We just get like a tight close up on her, just taking in everything she's just learned, everything she's just done. And then a monster jumps on her back, and it's actually a child monster, which I didn't realize
that either.
And so she kills it quite easily. She throws it off and like stomps its head. And then right afterwards the like mom comes up, and it's like a lady monster with like long hair and boobies.
Yeah, the boobies.
What was that?
That was a firework. People have been setting off a lot of fireworks.
Oh my God, that sounded so close. So the mom monster comes up, sees her dead.
Let's call her the boobie monster.
The boobie monster.
Yeah, she's got some real boobs.
She comes up, sees her dead child.
Sees?
Oh, yeah, excuse me. Census.
Census. I was just literally curious.
And is moaning, sad, mourning, and then turns her attention to Sarah. And Sarah makes a run for it. And as she's running, falls into this pool of blood. She completely submerges in it.
It's interesting. It's kind of reminiscent of Carrie.
Yes, this like, I'd say the whole rest of the movie, she looks like Carrie. Like, she's soaked head to toe in blood. The mom, or excuse me, the booby monster is in there with her. They have a big fight. They're dragging each other into the blood, out of the blood. There's kind of a rock ledge in the blood pool that Sarah climbs out onto, and there's this piece of bone that she's able to grab, and she slams it down into booby monster's eye, and it explodes blood out, and she just goes limp, and she like slides back into the pool of blood. And then Sarah is about to get up to keep moving. And then she hears something coming. She goes still. And another monster comes in and steps on her head. It's like standing on top of her and not noticing her. And it makes a noise. And when it opens its mouth, this like nasty goop falls out onto Sarah's head.
It's like this pus throw up stuff. Ew. It's so gross.
It looks like bile. Yeah.
Ugh.
And it drips onto her head.
God, I hated this.
But it doesn't notice her. And then it keeps moving. Again, she looks so wild at this point. She's like completely red head to toe. And she slowly moves after it and picks up this big like femur looking bone. And it senses her at some point, turns around, she bashes its head in.
So she's just after them now.
Yeah. I mean, she's just like, she reaches a point of like just complete badassery where she's like, I'll fucking kill any of them.
Everyone. Yeah. Yeah. Kill them all.
So she kills that one and then she tilts her head back and lets out a big scream to call her friends in. And so we see Rebecca and Sam and Juno hearing her and they're like, okay, let's go get her.
That would also call the monsters though, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's not the best. I mean, they hunt with sound, so probably wouldn't be my first instinct, but so they now are running towards her. Sam is in the lead and then another group of monsters is chasing after them. Sam gets to another part where they will have to crawl across another ceiling. It's like a different part where there's a new drop and pulls out her gear and starts like panic doing this and putting the thing in and one after another. And she's like, fuck, and like holding herself up and frantically trying to climb across this. And it's so hard.
It's not a good thing to do frantically.
It's so hard. And then Juno and Rebecca come up behind and they're like, no, Sam, like, don't do that. Come back. Like that. You can't do that. Like turn around. And then she's looking at them and then she turns back and there's a monster like on the ceiling because they can climb on walls and shit like spiders. And it is right on top of her and it like slits her throat with its finger, but she's not quite dead yet. And she pulls her knife out of her belt and stabs it and it falls down into the water below them. But then she dies and collapses, but she's like hung in her belt. So it's like this horrible shot of her like body dangling and her sister watching her die. And her sister lets out a big scream and is devastated. And then immediately is snatched by a monster and pulled back. And Juno goes to grab for her. And the monster is basically tearing out her insides, like tears up her stomach, starts eating her intestines. And Juno is just like, okay, I've got to fucking move, and just jumps off of the side of this part of the cave into the water below. Then she goes to climb out of this pool of water and she's struggling. It's slippery. Obviously it's like trickling water down all of the walls. She climbs up pretty high and is about to get to this opening that she could go through and then starts to slip. And then Sarah's hand comes down, grabs her, pulls her in. Sarah looks like rabid almost. Mm-hmm. And this is her first time, obviously, seeing Juno since the initial run-in with the monsters. And so she says, Rebecca. And Juno says, no, she didn't make it. Sam, no, she didn't make it. She says, what about Beth? And Juno says, she didn't make it either. And Sarah says, you watched her die? And Juno says, yeah. And Sarah just kind of looks like, all right, if you say so, let's keep moving. They each now have like a torch and an axe. And they're kind of walking. They see like where the arrows are leading them. There's just a ton of the monsters blocking their way. There's like 10 of them. And so they start fighting. Juno like smashes one of their heads onto the cave wall, like over and like bat, like basically smashes one of their skulls, like explodes it. Sarah sticks her thumbs into one of their eyeballs and kills them that way. She bites one.
Would that kill you?
Well, I think if you went far enough, yeah.
It's in that shot's insane. It's just a slow thumb entering the eye.
Yeah, I do. It's like don't too like much. That one bit.
It's really gross. She actually bites one of them in the throat.
Oh, hell yeah.
They're using their axes to stab them. We get like some skull stabs. It's just like a very violent crate. Like they're, it doesn't look easy, but they are winning. And they basically each kill like four or five of these things. And then there's this, they did it. They're all dead. It's just the two of them left. Sarah spits out the part that she bit off of one of them. Then they face each other. And
I mean, aside from the affair, it's your fault all our friends are dead.
Well, so then Sarah drops down in her hand. She was holding the feather necklace and she drops it down to show it to Juno. And in this moment, it's two things that Juno knows that she knows. She's like, oh, that means she knows that I killed Beth. And that means she knows that I was having an affair with her husband. So it's this real oh fuck moment.
Big 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hear more monsters coming. The sound of them like coming down the hallway. And Sarah just takes her pickaxe and swings it and stabs it into Juno's leg in this real nasty, it's like right in her knee, and it like shows it like going through her knee and like poking out.
Oh my god.
And but then Sarah turns to run, basically sacrificing Juno to save herself. And Juno pulls the axe out of her own knee and turns around to face the direction that the sound is coming from, that the monsters are coming from. And there's so many of them. There's like 15. We cut to Sarah and we hear Juno just screaming. And Sarah, I think there's still an arrow. She's still following arrows. She's running up this part of the cave that has these kind of bones on it again. And she's running up this weird bone path and slips and hits her head one more time.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
And you're just so mad. But it only lasts a second and she wakes up again, just a momentary knockout. And then she sees daylight at the top of this little bone hill. Like maybe this is where the creatures bring in their kills from the above ground or whatever. So she's running up, gets out. It is daylight. Her hand pops out of the side of the hill. We see her make it out. She pulls herself out, screams, and runs. And she's like running so fast that she's falling over. Like she just cannot run fast enough. And then she gets to the cars that they drove, puts the keys in the ignition, starts it up. She drives so fast. She like gets air in the car. It's like flat, like driving so fast, flying over cliffs. I mean, flying over the little potholes or whatever. Gets onto the main road and goes down and down. She's driving so fast and gets to a point where she's like, okay, like I think I'm far enough away, and pulls over to the side of the road and just starts sobbing.
Very traumatized.
She's so traumatized and she's sobbing, and she rolls down her window, vomits out the driver's side window. And then as she's turning back into the car, Juno's ghost is in the passenger seat. And this is where it gets a little confusing, because the American version ends there. That's the end.
It's just Juno's ghost and then roll credits.
What is her?
That's the version I saw.
What does her ghost look like?
It's just like, I guess, kind of like zombie-ish. Yeah, like kind of almost like waterlogged.
Ew.
Anyway, it's a little insane because it's like, okay. Like this is a friend drama, a family drama, a monster movie, a movie about like your own human like personal fears of being in claustrophobic spaces, and it's a ghost movie. That seems like crazy that it's all those things.
The American version ends there. There's another version.
Yes.
There's a UK version.
So the UK version, which I prefer, and this is the one I had seen up in... I only saw the US version this year. I didn't even know that it existed. But UK version, she sees Juno in the passenger seat, screams, and then wakes back up in the cave at the final time where she had hit her head. And there is no daylight. And it was just from her seeing daylight was just a dream. And she wakes back up and sees her daughter in the cave with her. Like, she's imagining her daughter's birthday. And they like...
It's a recurring image throughout the film that we forgot to mention.
Yeah, her daughter blowing out the candles on her cake. Mm-hmm. But then the camera pulls out and we see that she's still like deep in the belly of the cave. It's a much more hopeless ending.
I definitely prefer the UK
ending. I like it more too. But I think they also changed it because there is a descent too.
Mm-hmm. So they wanted to make it more appealing for the sequel.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so scary to imagine her. It reminds me a lot of Alien. It reminds me of like her being thinking she's free and then realizing there's like, false hope, which is such a common theme in horror movies. And when it's done well, it's like so gutting.
Holy it's just so shit. Devastating. Honestly, that ending is really hopeless, but... the idea that she would have gotten through all that shit just to then be haunted by Juno's fucking ghost also really sucks.
Yeah,
it sucks.
God, I fucking love this movie.
It was really good.
I think it's genius that it's only at the halfway point that they introduce the actual monsters. Like, that's kind of unheard of, I think. I feel like usually by the first act, you want to introduce your main villain. And they're like, nope.
Yeah, it already felt like their deaths were an inevitability. Like, before monsters come into play. Like, they're not making it out of there.
Nature is so fucking scary, I think.
It's the scariest thing. And humans are not equipped to deal with it. That's why we have built all these systems to protect ourselves from nature.
And survival of the fittest. It's like, that's not me. I'm not
that. That's not me. I know that's not me. I have to take fucking medication every day just to survive my own brain. Nothing is happening to me. I'm not in a cave. I'm not like, that's just me on a daily basis.
Emily, what do you think? Do you want to see it?
No.
Damn.
Are you sure you don't want to see those cute little mole men?
Yes. Look, could I be convinced at some point, under the right circumstances, to watch this movie? Yes. Do I want to? No. Would I be happy that I did if I watched it? Probably. Should I keep phrasing my thoughts this way?
I have to say, I was not that scared.
Here's the thing that's interesting to me, Henley. I think the kinds of movies we are scared of are very different.
Mm-hmm. What did we learn from this movie?
Don't trust a woman that wears large necklaces.
Oh, that's huge.
That's a huge one.
Don't go into a cave.
Just, ask a lot of questions. I think just have all the information before...
bring the guidebook.
Before entering in an endeavor. Just make sure you have all the information. But mainly, it's don't be adventurous. Just don't.
It's
safer at home.
Safer at home.
Safer at home.
And there are a lot of accents in this movie. But do you guys want to do Scottish or Irish?
Irish because also of normal people.
Okay.
Conal Waldron.
So Holly is Irish. Let me think of something she says. This cave is a lot cooler than... oh, God damn it. Cave's a lot cooler than I thought.
Cave's a lot cooler than I thought. Cave's a lot cooler than I thought.
So from all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch... Oh, goodbye.
Henley,
I need to hear yours.
goodbye.
Oh, that was good. Yay.
Hey, everyone. It's Henley. Thanks for listening to another episode of Too Scary, Didn't Watch. If you had a good time hanging out with us, then head over to Apple Podcasts where you can rate and review, throw us some 5 stars, and also subscribe. We are on social media, on Instagram and Twitter at TSDW Podcast. All right. TTYL.